A second later, urgent voices. A shout, the ringing of alarm bells, the echoing, frantic boom of drums. Well done, Tass. Boots pound past the door, and the already bright torchlight outside intensifies. The minutes pass, and I rattle my chains impatiently. Fire spreads quickly, especially if Tass has been dribbling as much fuel in the soldier section as I told him to. Already, smoke pours into my cell. A shadow passes by my door and looks in, no doubt to make sure I'm still securely chained, then moves on. Seconds later, I hear the key in the lock, and it opens to reveal Tass's small form.
I could only find the cell keys, Elias.
Tass scurries in and shoves a thin blade and a bent pin at me.
Can you pick the locks with this?
I curse. My left hand is still clumsy from the damage the warden did with his pliers, but I take the picks. The smoke grows thicker, my hands clumsier.
Hurry, Elias!
Tass eyes the door.
We must still get Darin out.
The locks on my manacles finally creak open, and a minute later I unlock the ankle shackles. The smoke in my cell is thick enough that Tass and I must crouch to breathe, but still I force myself to pull on the guard uniform he's brought me. The uniform cannot hide the stink of the interrogation cells, or my filthy hair or wounds, but it's enough of a disguise to get through Koff's hallways and into the prison yard. We pull wet kerchiefs around our faces, easing the sting of the smoke. Then we open the door and dart out of my cell. I try to move swiftly, but every step is pain, and Tass quickly darts out of sight. The smoky stone hallways are not yet aflame, though their wooden beams will catch soon enough. But the soldiers' quarters in the middle of the block, filled with wood furniture and littered with pools of fuel, courtesy of Tass, are fast turning into a solid wall of fire. Shadows move through the smoke, and shouts echo. I lurch past the stairwell, and moments later I look back to see a mask waving away the smoke and heading up and out of the block. Excellent. The guards are bolting, as I expected them to.
Elias!
Tass appears out of the smoke ahead of me.
Hurry! I heard the masks say that the fires upstairs are spreading!
All the damned torches the warden uses to light this place are finally coming to good use. Are you sure we're the only prisoners down here?
I checked twice.
A minute later, we make for the last cell at the north end of the block. Tass unlocks the door, and we enter in a cloud of smoke.
It's me,
I rasp to Darin, my throat already raw.
Elias! Thank the bleeding skies!
Darin scrambles to his feet and holds out his manacled hands.
I thought you were dead. I wasn't sure whether to believe Tass or not.
I set to picking the locks. I can feel the air growing hotter and more poisonous by the second, but I make myself work methodically.
Come on, come on.
The familiar snick sounds. The shackles fall away, and we bolt from the cell, keeping low to the ground. We're nearly to the staircase when a silver face suddenly looms out of the smoke ahead of us.
Drusius. You sly, conniving little mongrel!
Drusius grabs Tass by the neck.
I knew you had something to do with this!
Begging the skies for enough strength to at least knock Drusius off his feet, I spring forward. He sidesteps and shoves me into a wall. Just a month ago, I'd have been able to use his brutish attack to get the best of him. But the poison and the interrogations have stripped me of my swiftness. Before I can stop him, Drusius wraps his hands around my neck and presses. A streak of filthy blonde hair flashes past. Darin dives into Drusius's stomach, and the mask stumbles. I cough for breath and drop to one knee. Even during the Commandant's whippings or the Centurion's harsh training, I sensed my own resilience, buried deep where it could not be touched. But now, as I watch Drusius flip Darin onto his back and knock him senseless with a blow to the temple. I cannot harness that strength. I cannot find it.
Elias!
Tass is beside me, shoving a knife into my hand. I make myself lunge at Drusius. My leap is more like a crawl, but I have enough fighter's instinct left to drive the dagger into the mask's thigh and twist. He howls and grabs me by the hair, but I stab his leg and stomach again and again until his hands stop moving.
Get up, Elias!
Tass is frantic.
The fire is spreading too swiftly!
Can't!
You can! You must!
Tass pulls at me now, using all of his weight.
Pick up Darin! Drusius has knocked him out!
My body is frail and slow. So slow. It is worn out by the seizures, the beatings, the interrogation, the poison, the endless punishment of the past few months.
Rise, Elias Veturius!
Tass smacks my face, and I blink at him in surprise. His eyes are fierce.
You gave me a name,
he says.
I want to live to hear it on the lips of others. Rise!
I growl as I drag myself to my feet. As I move to Darin, kneel, and lift him over my shoulders. I stagger at his weight, though cough has left him far lighter than a man of his height should be. Desperately hoping that no other masks emerge, I lurch toward the stairs. The interrogation block is fully engulfed now. The beams of the roof aflame. The smoke so thick that I can hardly see. I stumble up the stone steps, Tass steadfast at my side. Break it down to what you can do. 1 foot, 1 inch. The words are a garbled chant in my head. Fainter and fainter when faced with the screaming panic of my failing body. What will happen at the top of the stairwell? Will open the door to chaos or order, and either way, I don't know if I'll be able to carry Darin out of the prison. The field of battle is my temple. The sword point is my priest. The dance of death is my prayer. The killing blow is my release. I'm not ready for my release. Not yet. Not yet. Darin's body grows heavier by the second, but I can see the door that leads out into the prison now. I reach for the handle, pull it down, push. It does not open.
No!
Tass leaps up, clawing at the door handle, pushing with all of his might. Open it, Elias. I drop Darin and yank at the enormous handle, peering at the locking mechanism. I fumble for makeshift lockpicks, but when I shove one into the lock, it breaks. There must be another way out. I spin around and drag Darin halfway down the stairwell. The wood beams that hold up the weight of the stone have caught fire. Flame races overhead. And I am convinced that the world has dropped away but for Darin, Tass, and me. The shudders of a seizure take me, and I sense the approach of an inexorable darkness that dwarfs everything I've endured until now. I fall, my body worse than useless. I can only sputter and choke as Tass leans over me, shouting something I cannot hear. Is this what my friends felt in the moment of death? Were they also consumed by this futile rage, made more insulting because it meant nothing? Because, in the end, death would take his due and nothing could stop him.
Elias!
Tass mouths at me, his face streaked with tears and soot.
Elias!
His face and voice fade. Silence. Darkness. Then a familiar presence. A quiet voice.
Arise.
The world comes back into focus, and I find the soul catcher leaning over me. The stark, empty boughs of the forest of dusk stretch like fingers overhead.
Welcome, Elias Veturius.
Her voice is infinitely gentle and kind, as if she's talking to an injured child. But her eyes are the same empty black they've been since I've known her. She takes my arm like an old friend would.
Welcome to the waiting place, the realm of ghosts. I am the soul catcher, and I am here to help you cross to the other side.
Chapter 50. Helene. Arvatas and I arrive in Antium, just as Rathana dawns. As our horses clatter through the city gates, stars still glint above, and sunrise has not yet graced the jagged mountains to the east of the city. Though Arvatas and I scoped out the land around the capital, we saw no sign of an army. But the commandant is clever. She might have slipped her forces into the city and hidden them in multiple places. Or she might be waiting until nightfall to unleash her attack. Faris and Dex join up with us as we enter the city, having spotted our approach from one of the watchtowers.
"Hail, Shrike!"
Dex clasps my hand as he steers his horse to fall in with mine. He looks like he hasn't slept in a year.
"The masks of the Black Guard are deployed and await your orders. I had 3 squads secure the Emperor. Another squad is out scouting for the army. The rest have taken over the city guard."
"Thank you, Dex. I am relieved he doesn't question me about Elias." "Faris," I say, "report."
"The girl was right,"
my big friend says. We weave through the wagons, men and animals entering Antium at this early hour.
"There is an army, at least 4,000 men.
It's the commandant's," I say. "Harper can explain." When we clear the traffic, I kick my horse into a gallop.
"Think carefully about what you saw," I call to Faris. "I need you to bear witness before the Emperor."
The streets are starting to fill, with Mercators out early to stake out the best spots for the festivities of Rathana. A plebeian ale merchant trundles through the city with extra barrels of his goods to supply to the taverns. Children hang up blue and green lanterns that symbolize the day. Everyone seems so normal, happy.
Still they clear the way when they see 4 black guards galloping through the streets.
When we reach the palace, I leap off my horse, nearly mowing down the groom who comes to take the reins.
"Where is the Emperor?"
I snap at a legionnaire on gate duty.
"In the throne room, Shrike, with the rest of the court."
As I hoped, the leaders of the Empire's illustrious gens are early risers, particularly when they want something. They'll have begun lining up to petition the Emperor hours ago. The throne room will be packed with powerful men, men who can bear witness to the fact that I saved the throne from the commandant's predations. I've spent days planning my speech, and as we approach the throne room, I go over it again in my head. The 2 legionnaires guarding the throne room doors attempt to announce me, but Dex and Faris step ahead of me, shove them out of the way, and open the doors for me. It's like having 2 walking battering rams at my side. Black Guard soldiers line the room at intervals, most standing between the colossal tapestries that depict the deeds of past emperors. As I make for the throne, I spot Lieutenant Sergius, the Black Guard who was stupid enough to address me as Miss Aquila the last time I was here. He salutes respectfully as I pass. Faces turn toward me. I recognize the paters of a few dozen Mercator and illustrious gens. Through the enormous glass ceiling, the last stars give way to daylight. Marcus sits on the ornately carved ebony throne, his usual sneer replaced by a look of cold wrath as he listens to a report from a courier who looks fresh from the road. A circlet of sharp points, patterned with Blackcliff's 4-sided diamond, adorns his head.
"Pushed past the border and are harassing the villagers outside Tiberium.
The city will be overrun if we do not get men out there immediately, my lord. Bloodstrike. Marcus notices me and waves off the legionnaire giving his report. It is good to lay eyes upon you again. He flicks his glance up and down my form, but then grimaces and puts a finger to his temple. I am relieved when he looks away. Pater Aquilus, he says through gritted teeth, come and greet your daughter. My father emerges from the rows of courtiers, my mother and sisters trailing. Hannah wrinkles her nose when she sees me, as if she smelled something foul. My mother nods a greeting, her knuckles white as she clasps her hands in front of her. She looks too afraid to speak. Livy manages a smile when she sees me, but I'd have to be a fool not to notice that she's been crying. Greetings, Bloodstrike. Father's pained glance takes in Arvatas, Faris, and Dex before returning to me. No, Elias, he seems to say. I give him a reassuring nod, trying to communicate with my eyes. Do not fear, Father.
Your family has been kind enough to grace me with their presence daily since you left.
Marcus's mouth curves into a smile before he pointedly looks behind me.
You've returned empty-handed, Shrike.
Not empty-handed, Emperor, I say. I come bearing something far more important than Elias Veturius. As we speak, an army marches on Antium, led by Carus Veturia. For months, she has siphoned off soldiers from the tribal lands and the border regions to create this treasonous army. That is why you're getting reports of wildmen and barbarians attacking our outlying cities. I nod to the courier. He backs away, not wanting to get involved in any discussion between the Bloodstrike and the Emperor. The Commandant means to launch a coup. Marcus cocks his head.
And you have proof of this supposed army?
I saw it, my lord, Faris rumbles from beside me. Not 2 days ago, in the Argent Hills. Couldn't get close enough to recognize the gens represented, but there were at least 20 standards flying. The Empire supports 250 illustrian gens. That the Commandant could muster the support of so many gets Marcus's attention. He tightens a big fist on his throne. Your Majesty, I say, I dispatched the Black Guard to take control of Antium's walls and to scout beyond the city. The Commandant will likely attack tonight, so we still have a full day to prepare the city. But we must get you to a safe locate.
So you did not bring me Elias Veturius.
Here goes. My lord, it was either bring Veturius back or report this coup. Time did not allow both. I thought the security of the Empire mattered more than one man. Marcus regards me for a long moment, before his gaze shifts to something behind me. I hear a familiar hated gate, the thunk, thunk of steel-bottomed boots. Impossible. I left before she did. I rode without stopping. She might have reached her army before us, but we would have seen her if she was headed to Antium. There are only so many roads that lead here from Koth. A slice of darkness in the recesses of the throne room catches my attention. A hood, with suns glaring out from within. A swish of a cloak, and he's gone. The Nightbringer. The djinn. He brought her here.
I told you, Emperor.
The Commandant's voice is smooth as a snake's coils.
The girl is deluded by her obsession with Elias Veturius. Her inability or unwillingness to catch him has led her to concoct this ridiculous story and to deploy valuable members of the Black Guard in a haphazard and senseless way. An ostentatious move. No doubt she's hoping that it will support her claim. She must think us fools. The Commandant circles me to stand beside Marcus. Her body is calm, her features unruffled. But when she meets my eyes, my throat goes dry at her fury.
If I were at Blackcliff, I'd be sagging from the whipping post right about now, breathing my last. What in the bleeding skies is she doing here? She should be with her army right now. I eye the room again, expecting to see her men pour in through the doors at any moment. But though I see Jen's Veturia soldiers throughout the throne room, they don't look as if they're readying themselves for battle.
According to the Commandant, Bloodshrike, Marcus says, Elias Veturius managed to get stuck in Koff prison. But you knew that, didn't you?
He'll know if I lie. I bow my head. I did, Your Majesty, but...
Yet you didn't bring him with you. Though he likely would have been dead by now anyway. Is that correct, Karras?
It is, Your Majesty. The boy was poisoned somewhere on his journey, the Commandant says. The warden reports that he has been having seizures for weeks. The last I heard, Elias Veturius, was a few hours from death. Seizures. When I saw Elias in Nur, he looked ill, but I assumed it was because of a hard march from Sarah. Then I remember what he said. Words that made no sense at the time, but that now send a knife through my gut. We both know I'm not long for this world. And the warden, after I told him I'd see Elias again.
Callow is the hope of our youth.
Behind me, Arvitas takes a sharp breath.
The night we she gave me, Shrike, he whispers. She must have had enough to use it on him.
You! I turn to the Commandant, and everything falls together. You poisoned him. But you must have done it weeks ago, when I found your tracks in Sarah, when you fought him. Is my friend dead, then? Truly dead? No, he can't be. My mind will not accept it. You used Nightweed because you knew it would take him a long time to die. You knew I'd hunt him, and as long as I was out of your way, I wouldn't be able to stop your coup. Bleeding skies. She killed her own son, and she's been playing me for months.
Nightweed is illegal in the Empire, as everyone here knows.
The Commandant looks at me like I'm covered in dung.
Listen to yourself, Shrike. To think that you trained at my school. I must have been blind to let a novice like you graduate.
The throne room buzzes, going silent when I step toward her. If I'm such a fool, I say, then explain why every garrison in the Empire is undermanned. Why didn't you ever have enough soldiers? Why aren't there enough on the borders?
I needed men to quell the revolution, of course, she says. The Emperor himself gave those transfer orders. But you kept asking for more. This is embarrassing to watch.
The Commandant turns to Marcus. I am ashamed, my lord. That Blackcliff produced someone so weak-minded.
She's lying,
I say to Marcus, but I can well imagine how I must sound. Tense and shrill against the Commandant's cool defense.
Your Majesty, you must believe me. Enough!
Marcus speaks in a voice that silences the entire room.
I gave you an order to bring in Elias Veturius, alive, by Rathana, Bloodshrike. You failed to carry out that order. Everyone in this room heard what the punishment for your failure would be.
He nods to the Commandant, and she signals her troops. In seconds, the men of Jen's Veturia step forward and seize my parents, my sisters. I find that my hands and feet have gone numb. It's not supposed to be like this. I'm being true to the Empire. I'm holding my fealty.
I promised the paters of our great families an execution, Marcus says. And unlike you, Bloodshrike, I mean to keep my vow.
Chapter 51. Liar. The morning of Rathana. When it is still dark outside, Afia and I leave the warmth of the cave and head out toward Koff in the frigid morning. The tribeswoman carries Darin's sword for me, and I've strapped on Elias's sims. Skies know he'll need them when we're fighting our way out of the prison. 8 guards, I say to Afia. And then you must sink the spare boats. Do you understand? If you... Skies, shut it, would you? Afia waves an impatient hand at me. You're like a tibby bird from the south that chirps the same few words over and over until you want to strangle its pretty neck. 8 guards, 10 barges to secure, and 20 boats to sabotage. I'm not an idiot, girl. I can handle it. You just make sure you get that fire inside the prison nice and hot. The more marshals we barbecue, the fewer to hunt us down. We reach the river Dusk, where we must part ways. Afia digs her booted toes into the dirt. Girl, she adjusts her scarf and clears her throat quietly. Your brother, he might not be what he was. I had a cousin sent to Koff once, she adds. When he came back, he was different. Be prepared. The tribeswoman edges to the shore of the river and flits away into the darkness. Don't die, I think, before turning my attention to the monstrous building behind me. The invisibility still feels strange, like a new cloak that doesn't quite fit. Though I've practiced for days, I do not understand how the magic works. And the scholar in me itches to learn more, to find books about it, to speak to others who know how to control it. Later, Lyra, if you survive. When I'm certain I'm not going to reappear at the first sign of trouble, I find a path leading up to Koff and carefully step in footprints larger than mine. My invisibility doesn't guarantee silence, nor does it hide signs of my passage. Koff's studded, spiked portcullis is flung wide open. I see no wagons making their way into the prison. It is too late in the season for traders. When I hear a whip crack, I finally understand why the gates aren't shut. A cry breaks the quiet of the morning, and I see several bent, gaunt figures shuffling out of the gate under the unforgiving eye of a mask. My hands go for my dagger, though I know I can do nothing with it. Afia and I watched from the woods as pits were dug outside the prison. We watched as the marshals filled those pits with dead scholars. If I want the rest of the scholars in the prison to escape, I cannot reveal my position. But still, I force myself to watch, to bear witness, to remember this image, so that these lives are not forgotten. When the scholars disappear around the eastern edge of Koff's wall, I slide through the gates. This path is not unfamiliar to me. Elias and I have exchanged messages for days through Tass, and I've come this way every time. Still, I stiffen as I pass the 8 legionnaires who stand watch at the base of Koff's entry gate. The space between my shoulder blades twinges, and I look up at the battlements, where archers patrol. As I cross the garishly lit prison yard, I try to avoid looking to the right at the 2 giant wooden pens where the marshals keep the scholar prisoners. But in the end, I cannot help but stare. 2 wagons, each half filled with the dead, are parked beside the closest pen. A group of younger, maskless marshals, fivers, load in more dead scholars, those who haven't survived the cold. B and many of the others can get them weapons, Tass had said, hidden in slop buckets and rags. Not knives or sims, but spearheads, broken arrows, brass beaters. Though the marshals have already killed hundreds of my people, 1,000 scholars still sit in those pens, awaiting death. They are ill, starved, and half frozen from the cold. Even if everything goes as planned, I do not know if they have enough strength to take on the prison guards when the time comes, especially with such crude weaponry. Then again, it's not as if we have many other choices. At this hour there are few soldiers wandering the blindingly bright halls of Koth. Still, I sneak along the walls and steer clear of the few guards on duty. My eyes flit briefly to the entrances that lead to the scholar pits. I passed them the first day I came here, when they were still occupied. Moments after, I had to run to find a place to retch. I make my way down the entry hall, through the rotunda, and past the staircase that, according to Helene Aquila, leads up to Mask's quarters and the warden's office. Time for you soon enough. A great steel door looms ominously on one side of the rotunda wall. The interrogation block. Darren is down there. Right now. Yards away. Koth's drums thud out the time, 5:30 in the morning. The hallway that leads to the martial barracks, kitchen and storage closets is far busier than the rest of the prison. Talk and laughter drifts from the mess hall. I smell eggs, grease, and burned bread. A legionnaire veers out of a room just ahead of me, and I stifle a gasp as he passes within a hair's breadth. He must hear me, because his hand falls to his sim, and he looks around. I don't dare to breathe until he moves on. Too close, liar. Go past the kitchens, Helene Aquila told me. The oil storage is at the very end of the hall. The torchlighters are always coming and going, so whatever you're planning, you'll have to move quickly. When I find the closet, I am forced to wait as a sullen-faced orc wrestles out a barrel of pitch and rolls it down the hall. He leaves the door cracked open, and I eye the closet's contents. Drums of pitch line its base like a row of stout soldiers. Above them sit cans the length of my forearm and the width of my hand. Blue fire oil, the translucent yellow substance the Empire imports from Marin. It reeks of rotted leaves and sulphur, but it will be more difficult to spot than pitch when I dribble it all over the prison. It takes me nearly a half hour to empty out a dozen canisters in the back hallways and the rotunda. I stuff each can back in the closet when it is empty, hoping no one notices until it's too late. Then I pack 3 more cans into my now bulging bag and enter the kitchen. A plebeian lords over the stoves, bellowing orders at scholar-slave children. The children whiz around, their speed driven by fear. They are, presumably, exempt from the culling going on outside. My mouth twists in disgust. The warden needs at least a few drudges to continue doing the chores around here. I spot B, her thin arms shaking beneath a tray of dirty dishes from the mess hall. I sidle toward her, stopping often to avoid the scurrying bodies around me. She jumps when I speak in her ear, but covers her surprise swiftly. B, I say, in 15 minutes, light the fire. She nods imperceptibly, and I move out of the kitchen and to the rotunda. The drum tower thuds 6 times. According to Helene, the warden will head to the interrogation cells in 1/4 hour. No time, liar. Move. I bolt up the rotunda's narrow stone staircase. It ends in a wood-beamed hallway lined with dozens of doors. Mask's quarters. Even as I get to work, the silver-faced monsters exit their quarters and head down the stairs. Every time one passes, my stomach clenches and I look down at myself, making sure my invisibility is still intact.
Do you smell something?
A short, bearded mask stumps down the hall with a leaner companion, only to stop a few feet from me. He takes a deep sniff of the air. The other mask shrugs, grunts, and moves on. But the bearded mask continues to look about, sniffing along the walls like a hound that's caught a scent. He stops short at one of the beams I've anointed with oil, his eyes dropping to the pool gleaming at its base.
What in the hells?
As he kneels down, I slip behind him, to the end of the hallway. He spins at the sound of my footsteps, his ears keen. I feel my invisibility falter at the rasp of his sim leaving its scabbard. I grab a torch off the wall. The mask gapes at it, too late, I realize that my invisibility extends to the wood and pitch, but not the flame itself. He swings his sword, and startled, I back away. My invisibility drops entirely, a strange rippling that starts at my forehead and cascades down to my feet. The mask's eyes widen and he lunges. Witch! I throw myself out of his path, hurling the torch at the nearest pool of oil. It flares with a roar, distracting the mask, and I use the moment to tear away from him. Disappear, I tell myself, disappear! But I'm going too fast. It's not working. But it must work, or I'm dead. Now, I scream in my mind. The familiar ripple runs back over me just as a tall, thin figure steps out of a hallway and swivels his triangular head toward me. Though I wasn't sure I'd recognize him based on Helene's description, I know him immediately. The warden. The warden blinks, and I cannot tell if he saw me wink out of sight or not. I don't wait to find out. I hurl another can of blue fire oil at his feet, rip two torches off the wall, and throw one down. When he shouts and jumps back, I swerve around him and hurtle down the stairs two by two, dropping the last can of oil as I do and pitching the final torch over my shoulder. I hear the whoosh of flame as a stair railing catches fire. I have no time to look back. Soldiers rush through the rotunda, and smoke pours from the hallway near the kitchens. Yes, B. I pivot around to the back of the staircase, the spot where Elias said he would meet me. A heavy thud sounds on the staircase. The warden has leaped over the fire and stands in the rotunda. He grabs a nearby aux by the collar and snarls at him.
Have the drum tower deliver the evacuation message. Orcs are to herd the prisoners in the yard and muster a cordon of spearmen to prevent escape. Double the perimeter guard. The rest of you!
His crisp roar brings every soldier in earshot to attention.
Proceed with the evacuation in an orderly fashion. The prison is under attack from within. Our enemy seeks to sow chaos. Do not let them succeed.
The warden turns to the interrogation cells, pulling open the door just as three masks spill out.
Bleeding inferno down there, warden, one of them says. And the prisoners? Only the two, both still in their cells. My medical equipment. We believe Drusius got it out, sir, another of the masks says. I'm certain one of the scholar brats set the fire, acting in league with Veturius. Those children are subhuman, the warden says. I doubt they are capable of speech, much less a plot to burn down the prison. Go, ensure the cooperation of the remaining prisoners. I will not allow my domain to descend into insanity over a bit of flame. What about the prisoners down there, sir?
The first mask nods to the stairs leading to the interrogation block. The warden shakes his head as smoke billows from the doorway.
If they're not dead already, he says, they will be in seconds. And we need every man in the yard controlling the prisoners. Lock that door, he says. Let them burn.
With that, the man clears a path through the stream of black-clad soldiers, delivering orders in his high, crisp voice as he goes. The mask he spoke to slams the interrogation door shut, throws a bolt, and secures it with a padlock. I sneak up behind him. I need his keys. But when I reach for the ring, he senses my tampering and swings his elbow back, connecting with my stomach. As I double over, gasping for air and fighting to maintain my invisibility, he peers over his shoulder, but is pulled away by the rush of soldiers pouring out of the prison. Right. Brute force. I yank one of Elias's sims from my back and hack at the padlock, not caring about the racket. It's hardly noticeable above the roar of the approaching fire. Sparks fly, but the lock holds. Again and again I swing Elias's blade, screaming in impatience. My invisibility flickers in and out, but I don't care. I must get this lock open. My brother and Elias are down there, burning. We made it this far. We survived Blackcliff and the attacks in Sarah, the Commandant, the journey here. It cannot end like this. I will not be done in by a bleeding, burning lock. Come on! I scream. The lock cracks and I put all of my rage into the next blow. Sparks explode and it finally opens. I sheathe the sword and fling the door wide. Almost immediately, I drop, choking on the foul smoke pouring out. Through squinted, tear-filled eyes, I stare at what should be a staircase. There is nothing but a wall of flame.
Chapter 52. Elias. Even if the soul-catcher hadn't welcomed me to the realm of death, an emptiness yawns at my core. I feel dead. I died choking in a prison stairwell, steps from salvation. Damn it. I need more time, I say to the soul-catcher. A few hours. I do not choose when you die, Elias. She helps me up, her face pained, as if she genuinely mourns my death. Behind her, other spirits jostle in the trees, watching. I'm not ready, Shaver, I say. Laia is up there waiting for me. Her brother is beside me, dying. What did we fight for if it was just going to end like this?
Few are ready for death,
Shaver sighs. She's given this speech before.
Sometimes, even the very old, who have lived full lives, fight against its cold grasp. You must accept.
No! I look around for some way to get back. A portal or weapon or tool I can use to change my fate. Stupid Elias. There is no way back. Death is death.
Nothing is impossible.
My mother's words. If she were here, she'd bully, threaten, or trick the soul-catcher into giving her the time she wanted. Shaver, I say. You've ruled these lands for 1,000 years. You know everything about death. There must be some way to go back, just for a little while. She turns away, her back stiff and unyielding. I pivot around her, my ghost form so swift that I see the shadow that passes across her eyes. When the seizures began, I say, you told me you were watching me. Why?
It was a mistake, Elias.
Shaver's eyelashes glint with moisture.
I saw you as I saw all humans. Lesser, weak. But I was wrong. I should never have brought you here. I opened a door that should have remained shut.
But why? She's dancing around the truth. Why did I catch your attention in the first place? It's not as if you spend all your time making moon eyes at the human world. You're too busy with the spirits. I reach for Shaver, startled when my hands pass through her. Ghost Elias, remember?
After the third trial, she says, you sent many to their deaths, but they were not angry. I found it strange, since murder usually results in restless spirits. But these spirits didn't rage about you. Other than Tristus, they moved on quickly. I didn't understand why. I used my power to see into the human world.
She laces her fingers together and fixes her black gaze upon me.
In the catacombs of Sarah, you ran into a cave ifrit. Murderer, it called you.
If your sins were blood, child, you would drown in a river of your own making, I say. I remember.
What it said mattered less than your reaction, Elias. You were...
She frowns, contemplating.
Horrified. The spirits you sent to their deaths were at peace because you mourned them. You bring pain and suffering to those you love. But you do not wish to. It is as if your very fate is to leave a trail of destruction. You are like me, or rather, like I was.
The waiting place suddenly feels colder. Like you, I say flatly.
You are not the only living creature to have wandered my woods, Elias. Shamans come here sometimes, healers too. To the living or the dead, the wailing is unbearable. Yet you didn't mind it. It took me decades to learn to communicate with the spirits, but you picked it up after a few visits.
A hiss cuts through the air, and I spot the all-too-familiar glow of the gin grove getting brighter. For once, Shaver ignores it.
I tried to keep you from Lyra, she says. I wanted you to feel isolated. I wanted something from you, and so I wished you to be fearful. But after I waylaid you on your journey to Koth, after you spoke my name, something awoke inside me. Some remnant of my better self. I realized how wrong I was to ask anything of you. Forgive me. I was so tired of this place. I only wished for release.
The glow grows brighter. The trees seem to tremble.
I don't understand. I wanted you to take my place, she says, to become soul catcher.
At first, I think I've misheard her. Is that why you asked me to help Tristus move on? She nods.
You are human, she says. Thus you have limits the djinn do not. I had to see if you could do it. To be soul catcher, you must know death intimately, but you cannot worship it. You must have lived the life in which you wished to protect others, but found that all you could do was destroy. Such a life instills remorse. That remorse is a doorway through which the power of the waiting place can enter you.
Shaver.
She swallows. I'm certain she hears the call of her kindred.
The waiting place is sentient, Elias. The oldest magic there is. And,
she grimaces apologetically,
it likes you. Already, it has begun to whisper its secrets to you.
I grasp at something she told me before. You said that when you became Soul Catcher, the Nightbringer killed you, I say. But that he brought you back and chained you here, and now you live.
This is no life, Elias, Shaver says. It is living death. Always I am surrounded by the spirits. I am bound to this place.
Not entirely, I say. You left the forest. You came all the way to get me.
Only because you were near my lands. Leaving for more than a few days is torture. The further afield I go, the more I suffer. And the djinn, Elias, you do not understand what it is to deal with my trapped brethren.
Shaver!
They cry out to her now, and she turns toward them.
No!
I shout the word in my head, and the ground beneath me shudders. The djinn falls silent, and I know, suddenly, what I must ask of her. Shaver, I say, make me your successor. Bring me back to life the way the Nightbringer did for you.
You are a fool,
she whispers, unsurprised at my request.
Accept death, Elias. You would be free of want, worry, pain. I will help you pass on, and all will be quiet and peaceful.
If you become soul catcher, your life will be one of repentance and loneliness, for the living cannot enter the forest. The ghosts cannot abide them. I cross my arms. Maybe you're too soft on the bleeding ghosts. You may not even be capable.
I am capable. I helped Izzy and Tristus pass through. Do this for me, Shaver. I'll live, save Darin, finish what I started.
Then I will tend to the dead and have a chance to redeem myself in full for all that I've done. I step toward her.
You've repented long enough, I say.
Let me take over.
I would still have to teach you, she says, as I was taught.
A great part of her wants this. I can see it. But she is frightened.
Do you fear death?
No,
she whispers.
I fear that you do not understand the burden you ask for.
How long have you been waiting to find someone like me?
I wheedle.
I have to get back. I have to get Darin out of Koth. 1,000 years, right?
Do you really want to stick around here for 1,000 more years, Shaver?
Give me this gift. Take the one I'm offering you.
For a second, her pain and suffering, the truth of her existence for the last millennium, is writ in her expression as clearly as if she'd screamed it out. I see the moment she decides, the moment the fear is replaced by resignation.
Hurry, I say. Skies know how much time has already passed in Koth. I don't want to get back to my body just in time for it to burn to a crisp.
This is old magic, Elias. It is not of jinn or man or ifrit, but of the earth itself. It will take you back to the moment of death. And it will hurt.
When she takes my hands, her touch burns hotter than a Saren forge. She clenches her jaw and releases a shrill keen that shakes me to my core. Her body glows, filled with a fire that consumes her, until she is no longer Shaver, but a creature of writhing black flame. She releases my hands and spins around me so rapidly that it's as if I'm enveloped by a cloud of darkness. Though I am a ghost, I feel my essence draining away. I fall to my knees, and her voice fills my head. A deeper voice rumbles beneath it, an ancient voice, the waiting place itself, taking possession of her jinn body and speaking through it.
Son of shadow, heir of death, hear me. To rule the waiting place is to light the way for the weak, the weary, the fallen, and the forgotten in the darkness that follows death. You will be bound to me until another is worthy enough to release you. To leave is to forsake your duty, and I will punish you for it. Do you submit?
I submit.
A vibration in the air, the taut silence of the earth before a land tremor. Then a sound as if the sky is being torn in half.
Pain. 10 hells pain. The agony of 1,000 deaths, a spike through my soul.
Every heartbreak, every lost opportunity, every life cut short, the torment of those left to mourn. It tears through me endlessly. This is beyond pain. The pinprick heart of pain. A dying star exploding in my chest. Long after I'm certain I can handle no more, the pain fades. I am left shaking on the forest floor, filled with a rightness and a terror, like twin rivers of light and dark joining to become something else altogether.
It's done, Elias.
Shaver kneels beside me in her human form once more. Her face is streaked with tears.
Why so sad, Shaver?
I wipe her tears with a thumb, feeling an ache when I see them.
You're not alone anymore. We're comrades in arms now, brother and sister.
She does not smile.
Only until you are ready, she says. Go, brother. Return to the human world and finish what you have begun. But no, you do not have much time. The waiting place will call you back. The magic is your master now, and it does not like its servants to be away for long.
I will myself back to my body, and when I open my eyes, I see Tass's frantic face. My limbs are free of the exhaustion I felt for ages.
Elias!
Tass sobs with relief.
The fire! It is everywhere! I cannot carry Darin!
You don't have to. I still ache from the interrogations and the beatings, but with the poison gone from my blood, I understand, for the first time, how it stole away my life, bit by bit, until it seemed to me that I had always been a shadow of myself. The fire blasts up the stairwell and races along the beams above, creating a wall of flames behind and ahead. Light flares above, visible through the fire. Shouts, voices, and for the briefest moment, a familiar figure beyond the flames.
The door, Tass!
I shout.
It's open!
At least, I think it's open. Tass staggers to his feet, dark eyes filled with hope.
Go, Elias!
I throw Darin over one shoulder, sweep the scholar child up in my arm, and fly up the stairs, through the wall of flame, and into the light beyond.
Chapter 53. Aline. The men of Gens Futuria surround my parents and sisters. The courtiers look away, embarrassed and frightened by the sight of my family having their arms twisted around their backs, marched to the throne, and forced to their knees like common criminals. Mother and father submit to the manhandling silently, and Livy only casts me an imploring look, as if I can somehow fix this. Hannah fights, scratching, kicking at the soldiers, her intricate blonde coiffure collapsing about her shoulders.
"Don't punish me for her betrayal, Your Majesty!" she screams. "She's no sister of mine, my lord! She's no kin of mine!"
"Quiet!" he roars at her, "or I'll kill you first!"
She falls silent. The soldiers turn my family to face me. The silken fur-clad courtiers on either side of me shift and whisper, some horror-struck, others barely restraining their glee. I spot the new pater of Jens Rufia. At the sight of his cruel smile, I remember his father's scream as Marcus cast him over Cardium Rock. Marcus paces behind my family.
"I did think we would have the executions at Cardium Rock," he says, "but as so many of the Gens are represented here, I don't see why we shouldn't just get this over with."
The Commandant steps forward, her eyes fixed on my father. He saved me from torture, against her wishes. He calmed angry Gens when she attempted to sow dissent, and he aided me when his negotiations failed. Now she will have her vengeance. A raw animal hunger lurks in her eyes. She wants to tear my father's throat out. She wants to dance in his blood.
"Your Majesty," she croons, "I'd be happy to assist in the execution." "No need, Commandant,"
Marcus says levelly. You've done enough already. The words carry a strange weight, and the Commandant eyes the Emperor, suddenly wary.